This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 28th of July, 2022, and we are post-FOMC, one that clearly surprised us relative to yesterday's podcast title and some of our analysis. We still think maybe certainly the market is making a mistake in where we are in the cycle, but then the Fed not really providing anything that would push back against the market's indulgence in its view that we are set for imminent peak Fed sometime later this year and potentially even rolling over next year. There was even some specific questioning to that effect in the Q&A. We'll talk more about that later in the podcast, but the market really just taking a baton and running with it with this Fed meeting. Strong risk on, as you can see, the equity baskets, crypto performing the best, the most speculative area of the market, et cetera. And we're through the minor resistance there in the S&P around the 4017 level as we came into this morning. But most importantly, we have our special guest on the podcast this morning, you, Stan Jakobsen, sitting out in Singapore, our chief investment officer. And safe to say, I think you have some pretty pointed views on this FOMC meeting and what we're seeing here. I'll let you just start wherever you want to, and I'll follow up with a couple of comments on what actually happened last night.
Yeah, so as you rightly say, the FOMC meeting was already before the meeting started indicating that Federal Reserve was at neutral, and being a neutral, of course, means in practical terms that we've probably seen peak interest rate and in that respect, probably also peak inflation. I think to some extent, the market was over-interpreting the lack of forward guidance as a signal that the market being now not being on a, let's call it, a predictive path by the Fed, but a path where the meeting will be meeting by meeting and data, whatever that is, will dictate the pace from here onwards. Of course, what is going on is that the market thinks that we are going into a deep recession, and we don't disagree on the interpretation of Fed. We probably don't even disagree on a little bit of risk on here, but what we disagree about is the fact that we are in an environment where we can see inflation coming down. And certainly, more importantly right now, is that we disagree on the recession risk. Although we see a slowdown in the economy, we see it as a much more shallow move. So what I want to point to, and some point which Bill Dudley, the former governor of New York and a most important key player during his time at the Fed, he said that Powell continued to go back to what he called the summary of economics. That summary economics indicates that we will be a 325, 350 at the end of 22. So an additional, certainly 100 basis point roughly now, and another 50 basis point in 23. And what is interesting, he did not only say that once, he said it three or four times in the press conference. So for me, it's pretty clear that the Federal Reserve is and always wants to be in the press conference dovish, but the delivery that they have to do in terms of monetary policy is clearly with the objective of reducing inflation. And the final point being that although they deliver 75 basis points, the reality is that the financial conditions, which is the prism by which Federal Reserve sees their policy implementation, is off by 60 basis points since the June meeting. That also coincided with the market, of course, having a significant rally of the low. So what is going on right now is still the same story. The financial conditions are being eased by the market and the overall consensus. And Federal Reserve is now just in terms of what they need to do in a position where they need to do more. So we end up, John, at least in our team, on the concept that we fully accept that there is an easing of financial condition. And if that continues, the market is positive. But if it reverses back to what we expect, a slightly stronger than expected economic performance and less of a recession, then we think the Federal Reserve will be back at the table trying to put in another 75 basis point next time and potentially even continue into 23, where most of the disagreement between both strategists and economists and the Federal Reserve appear.
Yeah, and then specific to what you just said there, so the market pricing in that we reach the peak Fed funds rate sometime around the end of this year, possibly very early next year, and start rolling over. And as I pointed out in yesterday's podcast, I repeated the chart with a slight update on slide 3, where you can see that the December 2023 euro dollar interest rate futures predicting that we're going to be cutting something like 60 basis points from whatever level we're at in December of this year. And that was not really strongly pushed back against by Powell. You mentioned he did say that that the June forecast, or you didn't say that, but his way of responding to all the questions around that market prediction or that market pricing of what's going on or what could go on next year was to refer to the June forecast. And again, I repeat a slide from yesterday with an update of where the market is predicting or pricing-ish the rates for the coming year. Plus, on slide four, 3.8% predicted for 2023 by the Fed and its median forecast. And the market actually, after this meeting, slightly lowering by a couple of basis points where it sees the rate. So it's 100 basis point discrepancy. The Wall Street Journal's Nick Timiraos, usually considered the Fed watcher of note, asked that question about whether the Fed's sort of comfortable with these prediction for rate cuts. And Powell simply referred to the June forecast. It wasn't very strong in its performance on the pushback. So a very interesting setup there, Stane. And I don't know how we sort of come to the market reacting to stronger than expected inflation, which I think is, I'm safe in saying, is your prediction. But I guess that with this data dependency, it's going to mean we're going to see an awful lot of volatility around data releases. At least I would expect so.
Yeah, no, clearly what has changed is that we no longer need to look at guidance from Federal Reserve of where the key interest rates are, because they clearly yesterday abandoned that view and said pretty much that we are data dependent. Where we disagree again is that the Federal Reserve is very confident that they are neutral today. That is not only contradicted by the financial condition, but it's also contradicted by their own internal projections. So I think what is going on right now is that the easing expected is incompatible with a stronger and higher, tighter financial condition index. So for that point, but maybe I would add a certain point. So, you know, what I really see different in this cycle from prior cycle that I experienced in my career is that, you know, the paradigm shift that we saw in 2020, which we have explained again on this podcast, was one where the Federal Reserve right now is saying, listen, the objective we have right now is to choose between inflation and unemployment rate. So let's look at the risk in this concept. If you have 220 million people in the US working and you want to see, not want to, but you have to accept a 2% lower unemployment, that will impact 4.4 million people, 220 million times 2%. Whereas, of course, the impact from inflation is on 300 million people in the US. So it's pretty clear that the political narrative is that to get the inflation down, because the damage done from inflation is severe. Having said that, of course, then that leaves, you know, okay, so if the Federal Reserve wants to have a soft landing or a less of a more shallow recession, then what they need to engineer, of course, is a high enough financial tightening for the inflation to come down. One, you can dispute whether they can actually do anything about energy, but certainly they can control the second round effects that we economists call it, the salary part. But the salary part is going through the roof. Visa this week, the credit card issuer came out and said they need to pay higher compensation. And for the record, the credit spent on the card is actually still double digit. So what the position we have is simply that the private balance sheet is in the best position ever. Everyone that ever needed to refinance on a mortgage side has refinanced. The spillover from the very, very supportive and excessively supportive fiscal stimulus into the private economy is still in effect. And if you look, and these are things that the listeners can take home and look at, but if you look at sort of what predicts recession generally and the best over not only the last two recessions, but over the last, you know, 10 recession, then it is that the conference board leading indicators year over year needs to go negative. Right now it's a plus 1.4. And even if it goes negative, the recession will happen at the earliest 9 months later than that. The other way to look at it is simply, okay, let's assume in a simplistic model that the Federal Reserve will remain on a tightening path until unemployment becomes unsupported for the general dual mandate. That will, in our opinion, mean that we move inflation rate up. There's those 2 percentage points, 5.5% unemployment. But to get to that 5.5% unemployment, it's not going to happen because simply there's too little jobs, there's too much availability, and again, the private sector continues to actually being short of labor, not long of labor. So non-jobless claims for weeks in every single recession we ever seen, the weekly average needs to be above 350,000. Right now we have a run rate of 230. So again, let me say that we are not disputing that there's a slowdown. We're not disputing that there could be potentially technically a recession. What we are disputing is that the reaction function and the impact on the economy and the impairment on the economy would be as big as they've been in the past, simply because we're in a different paradigm shift. We come from a stronger balance sheet position. And ultimately, what that leads us to think is that interest rate will stay higher for longer because simply you need to tighten monetary conditions.
Right. And we saw and talking on the inflationary risk side of thing, we talked yesterday about this global natural gas situation, where it's such a critical component and input with both power and natural gas itself, both in US and Europe, and of course in Asia with the LNG prices, which are staggering. And noting that Japan is a larger user actually of natural gas than Germany and has to rely on those LNG supplies. But we did get a weekly key stock report out of the US, the crude oil and products. And I have the overview there on slide 5. And you can only imagine where we would be if we hadn't drawn 135 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve since the end of 2019. So look at those stock levels, and those stock levels on the left there on that chart for the crude oil stocks, that is not including the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. That's just the ones that are in Cushing, and I guess it's Cushing or other storage facilities generally in the U.S. And you see they're at the lower end of the range, despite, again, that 135 million barrel draw, and the products situation also looking very tight. So as long as we're not seeing material drop in real demand, with given Russian reduced supplies globally as well, we are challenged, to say the least, on the supply side. And then briefly, I'm going to get back to you, Stane, but I want to briefly run through a couple of things, including the FX reaction, of course, with this risk on, with a celebration or hope that the Fed is going to be reaching some sort of peak Fed funds rate on schedule. This is a week for the dollar, or weakening the dollar, and we're seeing potentially the resistance coming to play in key dollar pairs. If this reaction function continues, I think you need to give it another day or so, possibly through the end of the week, and that PC inflation data point on Friday. But 102.75, the key focus here for resistance in euro dollar, whether that opens up the view towards 105, 106, and 0.70 has been in play in Aussie dollar, a really big chart level there. And with this whole sense of the Fed cycle here, the yen is also picking up. And Urian, to my mind, I've highlighted that on the chart on slide 6, looks like it ought to be rolling over just from a relative rate spread perspective, and also due to the particular woes that Europe faces and the ECB faces in facing these peripheral spread risks. So watching that 136.86 area as a pivot and trigger point. And of course, that's without even Japan or the Bank of Japan coming in with a change to its policy, which is a potential down the road if these inflationary levels continue, which we think they are likely to do over the cycle. So there's that. And then we have earnings reports coming in hot and fast. I didn't even mention at the top of the program that after hours, we had two rather large companies reporting. Meta out with their first quarterly decline in revenue in the history of the company, reporting that after hours. That was largely expected, but it was their forecast that really spooked investors as they looked at a revenue range in the 26 to 28.5 billion for the coming quarter versus 30 billion plus in the analyst community. And then Qualcomm, the big chip maker and equipment maker for all things smartphone related, reporting or also with a very weak forecast relative to the expectations. Not good stuff. And then we have Tonesetter Apple out today. I have a 5-year chart there on slide 7 showing that we are back up towards, it's a weekly chart, so that's the 40-week moving average, but that's a very key tone setting moving average, also equivalent to the 200-day on the daily chart. For that company, there are some fears that people sitting on their hands waiting for the new models in this fall, and those that are, and due to weak demand out in China, as well as supply chain limitations potentially affecting that result. It's a massive, it is the largest company, so we need to watch for that. And then we have the macro calendar, and this is where I want to get your input here, Stane, not just on the macro calendar, but that first item there, the Biden Xi talk. Now, you're out in Asia, and I think the attention level on this is, of course, it's high globally, but it's especially high out there. Take us through what you think is going on and what's at stake here.
Of course, the relationship between the China, U.S. and China and Taiwan is a very complicated animal to deal with and analyze. but probably a better way to phrase this is some of the conversation I've had here in Singapore. And Singapore, of course, is privy to a huge insight as the relationship because Singapore at a political level, but also at a practical level, is very high. But what's going on here is that we are taking note of the fact that the PLA, the Chinese military, is very aggressive in its rhetoric. Sort of the bullish or less concerning interpretation that is that, you know, the way the Chinese system operates is that Xi Jinping sets out the course. But what happens right now in China is that every time Xi Jinping sets something at 1x, then every policymaker in the world trying to live up to his expectation do 3x of that. So, of course, that means that the rhetoric becomes increasingly rhetorically strong in order to mirror what they think the president of China does. So I think to a large extent, the Asian interpretation is that yes, there's a lot of rhetoric that has been increased in aggressiveness, but that aggressiveness is not necessarily a reflection of the state of China. So I think for the Thursday meeting, I think it's critical to listen to what is the press conference afterwards. I would expect that relatively to the very strong and aggressive wording that we've seen from both sides, I think there will be some track back on that people will try to reduce the direct facing off that could happen. Of course, at the end of this, it's still that Pelosi, the speaker, still wants to go to the US. And in China, I think they are probably misinterpreting the fact that although she's number three in the ranking order of the US administration, she is not directly correlated to the president on all issues. Although they are from the same party and she's the speaker representing on the Hill, the White House, she is not necessarily a person who is neither needing to or wants to toe the line that is set by the White House. Of course, we all know that the White House and the U.S. military really wants Pelosi to not go, whereas a lot of Pelosi fans and supporters says that she needs to go in order not to basically back down from the threats that have been issued again rhetorically. But you know, very complicated, John, and I'm not one who's going to sit here and say I have any strong feelings for it. But my gelling feelings over the last 2 days. Being a Westerner, I was concerned about the rhetoric, but when I talked to the Chinese insiders, they say, you know, you have to be, you know, discounted the fact that party officials in China and the PLA will talk always much in a much stronger language than the president, and secondarily the overall risk is that they don't see China as wanting to engage Taiwan, certainly not after what happened with Ukraine and Russia and all these things. You know, conclusion from Asia is that it's nervous and there is some potential incident risk, but it is not as bad as the actual headlines indicate.
Okay, so that's the case. So we also have the first estimate of Q2 GDP up today out of the U.S. There's quite a range of forecasts for that, slightly positive, and there are a couple of data points indicating that might lean a bit more to the positive side, durable goods orders, trade balance, et cetera. So we'll watch for that. And as you indicated, Stane, it's a technical recession, even if we do get a slightly minus print, and there will be heavy revisions to that. But it's hard to call it a U.S. recession when we have the unemployment rate near record lows here. And then we have one of the leading indicators, though, for the jobs market is that jobless claims figure. But it certainly needs to rise a lot more to be of concern, though it has sort of consistently risen from its record lows. Certainly adjusted for population since the beginning of this year. And then we have the PCE inflation data point tomorrow, but we'll have two more prints on the official CPI, which is more leading heading into that September FOMC meeting. So interesting to see in a broad brush here if this risk on rally survives. At the end of this week, after the initial knee jerk took it higher, market able once again to sort of indulge its views on what will happen for the cycle since the Fed is not pushing back against what the market is trying to build in terms of a case for how the economy will shape up towards the end of this year, and then how the Fed will respond to that both this year and next. So we'll see where it all stands tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.